loves it. He's like, clap! And he's like back at the diner. He's like, and then when he finds like another person who's into it, they're like, they fangirl out about it. I love it so much because I understand.
And so they come to a clearing where everyone takes a rest for the evening. Yeah.
They bed down before?
They come to the thicket. And that's when the vacuum goes from low to shag. And they go barreling through the thicket.
Yeah, he's cracking over all of these sticks coming out of the ground. He's just crushing them.
Yeah. And then they come to a clearing in which Lampy exclaims from on high, "A clearing!"
Oh, so this is the part where they bed down for the night.
Yeah, this is the part where the lamp and the radio are bickering, and then the radio like corners off his own circle, and he's like, "No one's allowed in here."
Yeah, and everybody's tired, and the vacuum's like, "What are you guys complaining about? You didn't have to do anything today."
Yeah, and he's like, "I got a full bag, and
you just emptied that out. What's your problem?" What's happening is the blanket wants to cuddle somebody, and everybody's like, no.
Emotionally needy? I think we should add that to the list.
Oh my gosh. Well, and this is the thing. Doesn't pester one particular other person. Goes to the lamp. The lamp's like, what are you talking about? Goes to the radio. He's like, don't cross my line.
Mm-hmm.
The vacuum was like, no, because he's an untouchable, grizzly, untouchable character. And then the toaster is like, no. Because
I'm not the master.
The toaster just, yeah. The toaster sleeps on the counter at night. Toasters, you don't cuddle toasters.
You don't cuddle toasters. Especially not in the tub.
Oh no, dark.
Now I got L.A. Woman stuck in my head.
That's okay. It turned into witchy woman in my head.
How does L.A. Woman go?
L.A. Woman, you're my woman. Got my mojo rising. Mr. Mojo rising.
I'm just going, ooh, L.A. woman, she got infinity.
Yeah, that's somebody else. The Doors was famous for these really long instrumental riffs. And during one of those long instrumental riffs, Jim Morrison goes like, city lights, city lights.
Straight up put this all uncut on. Nobody wants to listen to that.
Anyways, so nobody wants to cuddle with the blanket because he's, you know, he doesn't like, you know, push. He's not pushy. I will say that. Like when someone says no, he's just sort of like, oh, okay. And he slinks off to someone else.
Yeah, he's sad. He's just a sad character. And that actually contrasts the end of the movie.
Right.
So they you can see them all separate in this little clearing.
Right. There's just this moment where like the toaster seems like he would be, you know, like kind of open to, you know, like letting Blanket come and snuggle with him because he seems like pretty aware of what everybody's kind of going through, and he's supportive.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
matter. We're screwing up all the pronouns.
This is not a pronoun friendly podcast now.
But we are normally accepting.
Normally we are, yeah, very accepting, and I think we generally get our pronouns on point. This episode is not a good example of it.
Inanimate, except animate objects. They don't have that, but we got to give ourselves crap about it because we're trying to be woke.
Trying, failing, maybe.
Whatever. No. They wake up, they're walking through the forest again.
Yeah.
They're being pulled on a cord through the forest by Kirby, who is just a workhorse.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, do you hear that? Do you hear that?
It's just something going on. And they can start seeing lights because they're still going through the thicket, but they can see some lights kind of like at the end of a tunnel.
Yeah, they're coming out of the forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when we come across a pond with all sorts of creatures making noise.
It's just...
What did you call it?
I called it the forest stomp sequence.
Mm-hmm.
If you refer back to our Earth Girls is Easy episode, there's a moment when Flip Flop, Nim Nom, and Tip Top... use sound clips that they hear from the TV and, like, you know, do this stomp style.
I can't get over those names.
You know, Wimp Wamp, Dim Dom, and what. And here's the thing. This happened in the 80s quite a bit, and it's something I really like, and they reference it. Okay, so on Bob's Burgers, they have this thing called Clap, and Bob didn't want to go to see this show Clap, but then they, like... I guess this is relevant to applauders because they come out and they're like, and then they get all, and he loves it. He's like, and he's like back at the diner. He's like, and then when he finds like another person who's into it, they're like, they fangirl out about it. I love it so much because I understand.
This could this movie regained popularity in the 90s. Guess what else came out in the 90s?
What?
Stomp.
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 What? Whatever happened to Stomp? Is it just in some back alley in Vegas now?
Maybe they're still kicking it, kicking the barrels. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Sorry.
This also kind of reminded me of Thumbelina a little bit, this scene. If you remember Thumbelina, was it Don Bluth?
Yeah. There's a certain flavor to animated animals from this era. They all kind of have this rounded, what are those chipmunks? Chip and Dale? You're allowed to laugh at me. Chip and Dale, they've got those kind of rounded
bug-eyed. Rescue Rangers?
Yeah, just that shape to them. They've got these rounded features and Google eyes and
yeah.
And the appliances look pretty on point, but these guys, it feels like a different movie altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Well, frogs doing synchronized swimming.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird, but
a fish singing.
La 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 la. And they spit in his mouth. Oh God, they spit in his mouth. Do you remember the fish jumps out of the water and goes la 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 la.
Yeah, and they get
and they go, and it all goes in his mouth.
Yeah.
I know there's a Japanese word for that and it's super gross. Bukkake. Ah, gross. I should know that. I don't know that. I looked that up just now.
Just now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was until now.
Okay.
Oh God. I just don't like bodily fluids and so, and I know that they're frogs, so they're spitting water from the pond. But like, it's well, whatever that is not, the word isn't taboo. It's like, I get grossed out. What is the word equivalent of when you point in your throat like you're going to puke?
Retching?
Retch.
Retch?
Retch.
Yeah.
It makes me want to retch. Yeah. Spinning in the mouth. That's super gross. Okay. So these animals are doing ridiculous things.
My snuggle up to blanket and he absolutely loves it because he is emotionally needy.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we're cuddling mice.
But you got to be careful.
They start to drag him to his death in a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Here's the thing. They're all enjoying it. Like they're having a dance party with these guys as they do their stompity clapping, singing. Like hijinks ensue. There's like a worm that almost gets eaten by a bird, which almost gets eaten by the fish. Eventually ends in the puddle. And like the worm goes into the pond and all of these, the fish flaps through and all these bubbles come up. And then did you notice that it fades from two of the bubbles as the bubbles rise up to being the toaster's eyeballs?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a very clever fade. It was actually pretty good because the toaster's like, oh no, all this business, it stopped being fun. All this stuff is going down now.
Right. Well, like, so they kind of have some fun stuff, you know, blanket snuggling with mice. And there's a turtle who can't have fun with a turtle around. And
turtle's on its back legs a lot for a turtle, but I don't know turtles.
And the toaster's just kind of like, she's hanging out. And then all of these animals kind of like are, you know, like you see frogs trying to like, they're making weird faces in the reflection.
Oh,
and that's what makes the toaster kind of be like.
I thought they were chipmunks or squirrels or something were like making faces inside the toaster's reflection.
Maybe it was. It was random animals who were.
And it was like the toaster felt like they were being mocked and was like, I'm done. The blanket's getting killed. I'm getting weird faced at.
Yeah.
Was anybody else being abused in that scene?
I don't think so. I think it was just the two of them.
The toaster's like, wrap it up. Let's go.
Yeah. And the toaster like actually runs away and gets chased by some animals until he happens upon a flower.
Goes around the side of a bush. And okay, so when Jen and I watched it a couple days ago, the DVD skipped. I must have hit a button or I tried to rewind it and then it skipped ahead. And then I was like, oh, just get us back to the forest, you know, where the animals are. And we accidentally skipped this part, which is tragic because it would have prepared me for today. Okay, sorry, please go on.
So the toaster hides behind a hedge, makes a grand escape from the animals, and there is this beautiful flower, a single flower.
It's a little yellow flower, delicate.
With this ray of light beaming onto it, and the flower looks at its own reflection in the toaster.
It was behind a hedge in front of a tree, so this is a very lonely flower.
Yeah.
They set that up visually very clearly.
Yeah, and it sees another flower, but
it's just like it.
It doesn't know that it's just a reflection of itself.
So it goes to hug its brother, lover, yeah. whatever the like it's, just life mate. And the toaster's like, oh
no. This it's just a reflection. And the toaster like,
I'm not a flower.
Yeah, the toaster like runs away from.
Which is funny because it's Disney and he could have said, you could call me flower if you want to.
But instead he just runs around and he hides behind the other side of the hedge.
And then peeks back into the hedge, guys.
Yeah. And what does she see? Because I keep misgendering this poor toaster.
This poor flower is so crushed at being rebuffed that it is limped over. And as the toaster gazes upon it, it loses a petal. And it is probably the saddest moment in the entire film.
It's wilted. It's like hanging over itself.
It's gonna die.
Yeah,
because it's alone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can work that into your religious metaphor.
Well, I kind of took it a completely different way because I didn't realize that the flower was alone. And I mean, when you mentioned that just now, that it was set up visually to be alone, it kind of just spits in the face of my faith analogy, which is fine. That's spits in the mouth of my
faith. Oh no.
Sorry. Okay. But my original point was that our faith can be a reflection of how we choose to see ourselves. The toaster is saddened by the flower losing its faith because, you know, it was like that was the justification. It kind of falls through now that I realized that it was because it was lonely.
What was it supposed to be?
Well, okay, so I took it as the flower seeing itself was its own faith.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I don't think that holds up because it was alone. I mean, I'd probably need a little bit more time to kind of rework it. Like, my notes are like a couple of months old.
No, it's okay. Oh, and we have completely different experiences with this film, and that's fine. One of the things that I like about this film is that it played to a lot of the feelings I had at the time that I saw the film. Like, it all made perfect sense. Like a movie does as a kid. Then you rewatch it and you're like, what the hell is going on exactly? But like, I had intense feelings of loneliness as a kid. And so I really identified with Blanky because I was like, mm-hmm. I want to be with people. I'm here with people. And these people don't want to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the flower, which is like the golden core of that issue itself.
Right.
Like, I feel alone right now.
Yeah.
And that's why those two things either drive me absolutely insane or make me feel like intense sorrow for a plant that is around for guys no less than like no more than 10 seconds, maybe 15 mm-hmm. seconds.
It was a great way to visually show an emotion because mm-hmm. there is like in this moment the toaster says like what maybe one line.
Yeah. I'm not a flower.
Right. And that's it.
But you also notice it's a yellow flower.
Mm-hmm.
Blanket's yellow.
Mm-hmm.
This is the part is leading to the scene where toaster acknowledges Blanket's
need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you see at one point when Blanket's getting pulled in to the nest of mice, uh-huh. the mice are pulling him in. He doesn't want to be pulled in, and Toaster is the one who goes in and rescues
him. Yeah. Well, Toaster's a caretaker, the leader of the thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is another reason why I kind of felt like Toaster rebuffing Blanket earlier seemed a little bit out of place because Toaster is so much the leader, you know, willing to take care of people.
But doesn't recognize how to meet somebody with their love language.
Oh.
Some of that altruism of the toaster gets in the way of being able to see other characters as fully developed beings to have a relationship with. That altruism really makes that toaster drive its own story and maybe not think of the ramifications of how they treat those other things. What words have impacts, you know, just with that one sentence, you know, I'm not a flower. That flower decides that, well, you know, what is there left for me? So there's this kind of like, there's this almost, you made the Pilgrim's Progress reference before. There's this kind of Vanity Fair feeling to this scene in particular where it starts out really fun. You know, there's a lot of dancing and playing and most, if not all of those characters that are driving the plot kind of pull back from that play in some way. Like they decide that their journey is important, that they need to move forward in some way. So
yeah, it's interesting because simultaneously they recognize that, like Toaster realizes that you have connections here and now that you need to take care of. They have friends that they need to actively take care of and love on, but they're also joined by the common desire to get back to Rob. Sad flower is so sad.
Yeah.
Okay, so they presumably walk until nighttime when they've got to bed down. And
they are in a dark and ominous forest.
So they are all looking for a place to sleep.
And Lampy has the best place. He's just like hops into the middle of a tree and he has his light go on and he's just like, what about here?
And it lights up like a giant jack-o'-lantern with like big jaggedy teeth and they're all outside and they're like, ah! And they all run and Lampy's like, what are you guys doing? Turns around, shines his light on the same tree and it lights up the same way.
Yeah.
And he's like, ah!
I was like, yes, sleep in the territory.
Territory.
Yeah. And the objects don't go for it. They start bickering because there's a lot of bickering in this movie because they're all children.
Bicker so much. Except Blanky has the best idea.
Yeah. He turns himself into a tent.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it questions Blanky's size because here's the thing. Like, it's like a lap blanket. It's like a heated blanket. That's what Blanky's face is the dial for a heated blanket, right? Mm-hmm. But it's smaller than the twin size bed that you see it on earlier. But now it's stretched enough that a vacuum can sleep under it.
Mm-hmm. I thought we already established that the blanket was magical.
Blanket is magical because my notes say Blanky's face can be anywhere on its body. Mm-hmm. The blanket's face is in the bottom corner.
Right.
And it is very clear that it's the bottom quarter of the blanket. But throughout the film, it's all over. It just floats around the body of the blanket.
Right.
It's weird.
And this was also the moment where Toaster kind of, you know, snuggles up to Blanky a little bit. And Lampy looks at him and he's like, hey, why are you being so nice to Blanky all of a sudden? And Toaster says, oh, well, I just want to be, you know, nice to other people so I can feel warm inside.
I don't get what you mean. That's what he says.
Yeah. And then he just, you know, talked.
That toasty feeling.
Yeah. And he was like, and then Lampy brings up a moment when.
Toaster says, you know, like a glow, talking about her filaments their filaments like heating up. But the word glow gets Lampy. And he's like, you know, like when I see the master.
Yeah.
And then it goes.
And the lamp talks about how Rob, the boy, went ahead and the lamp had a burnt out bulb. And he was like, oh, no, this is the end of the world. And master just replaced it. Mm-hmm. Super easy. And then Lampy felt so much better. And
he felt valued. And it was the connection. So now they're seeing. And I guess this goes back to what we just said. But the relationship that they have with each other can be just as important as the relationship with the master.
Mm-hmm.
They can have this connection together. But my favorite part is every time the lamp lays his head down, is he taps the rock twice. And then he just thunks his head down.
And it's a thunk.
Yeah. He's always putting his head on rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Rocks his pillows to lamps.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is when we get into a dream sequence.
It's not a dream sequence. It's a nightmare sequence.
That's right.
So it opens on the toaster, just happily making toast. And
for the master.
Who always makes a face into the reflection. And then when that face is made, the toast pops up.
Yeah. Like, I think they actually show him spreading some jam on bread.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we start seeing, like, smoke kind of rise up.
Yeah, is it coming out of the toaster yet?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say so, yeah.
So then the house starts to burn down.
Right. And the smoke monster grabs the master and then, like, turns into this clown firefighter.
Yeah, the clown firefighter. This thing, like, you'd forget, and I did, that this thing is the stuff of nightmares. It's got long, jaggedy teeth. It's everything you think a clown nightmare. It's better than a Scooby-Doo nightmare clown firefighter because it's, like, the real, like, manifestation of the destruction of the relationship that this was just trying to solve.
Right.
Save. Like, just, what does the clown say?
Run.
Oh, God! I pushed that out of my head 3 or 5 times now because it's the most terrifying thing because he's just like, rah, 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 and then he gets really close to his face and he just says the word run. And that is the worst.
It is terrifying.
So John Lasseter got fired for pitching this movie to Disney. And I think that if he detailed any part of the scene, that would make sense to me. Like, this is not a Disney scene at all.
Okay, so they cut 20 minutes from this movie. It's 90 minutes long. There are two sequences that they further wanted to cut, and one of them's more iconic, but this was one of those moments that they were thinking about getting rid of. And I think it's kind of important because it shows that there's this big emotional battle going on about, you know, seeking out the person you want to be with, but, like, also you might burn the house down in the process.
Well, you might end up dying because, like, the toaster at one point in the nightmare is dangling over a tub.
A full, bathtub!
Full of water.
The suicide references in this film.
And the forks, that
yeah.
come out.
Yeah, yeah. Just like a fork and a toaster, like the number one thing you were told not to do in the 80s. Okay, so there are things in this movie that you don't realize until you're an adult watching it, which is life, right? But there's a bunch of sexual innuendo. There's a lot of reference to suicide. It is insane.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like adults made this movie.
For adults, that's the thing. But they twisted it to be a kid's film, so this is why my brain is broken. It's because they were like, animation, Naomi, you can watch that. That's fine. And then it's just like...
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, so why would it scare a toaster to be over the bathtub? And also, like, he goes in the river later, so what does it fucking matter?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Fritz the cat, but it's pretty close.
No, it's not. Fritz, not even close. Don't watch Fritz the cat.
Okay.
Unless you're going to tell me all about it, because it is wow. Okay. Okay, Lampy is a dumbass. Toaster raises. Oh,
there's a storm.
Yes, but before this is the technical thing I wanted to tell you. During that sequence, when the toaster pops up two pieces of toast, the master only takes one. And then as the toaster's watching him put the jam on it, kind of raises her arms, which are her levers, to like kind of lovingly be like, oh, I'm eating that toast I made, right? Mm-hmm. And when it raises and lowers its arms, the toast goes up and down. Because that's the mechanism, right? You push it down and the toast goes down. But like the toast has popped up. And so it just kind of goes up and down as the gesture towards the kid. It's I was like, oh, thank you. Science.
Consistency.
They kind of did that when they're sleeping under the, when they're in the tent made of blankie. The vacuum, when he's sleeping, his airbag goes in and out too. There's those little John Lasseter things that you would notice in like a Toy Story as just really brilliant.
Even though they play fast and loose with the chords and how they can articulate and stuff, and that might drive me crazy, but like the sound you make is perfect for a lamp's head hitting a rock, punk, every time. I'm gonna appreciate your craft.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So Toaster wakes up to a storm, Blinky gets blown away, and the chair battery is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what Lampy does to try and get that chair? Like everybody else is far away from the chair battery.
Well, because Blanket blew away.
Right.
So it's now missing from the party.
Yeah. So Lampy is like, oh, I have a light. I can go ahead and, you know, help things see because it's in the dark.
How is... Okay, science. Sorry. But the vacuum rolls away and Lampy's alone with the chair. How is the vacuum moving without being plugged in? Because they show at great pains.
I think the vacuum can like move itself without being plugged in. But if it's having to deal with other people. Oh, but then later on, it shows everybody else pulling the vacuum. You know, we were given props for being consistent and the consistency just like.
No. Yeah. Here's the thing. Some science is good on this. Some science is bad. The objective of the scene is that the lamp has to be alone with the chair. So just accept what's going on.
Right. So the lamp gets on top of the chair, plugs into one of the outlets of the power strip that's connected to the battery, and there's lightning going on, and he
points his snoot in the air as high as it can go.
Yeah, and then he gets shocked by lightning.
How he did not explode, I don't know, but the thing that pisses me off about this part is that the outlets attached to the battery, you know how many there are?
Three.
Yeah, how many people are there?
There's four.
Five.
Five.
There's five. Oh, yeah. It makes me incredibly mad. I mean, I know I know that the
radio might be on batteries.
Radio has emergency batteries explicitly stated, but
maybe there's three on each side of the.
No, it's strapped directly to the battery.
So are you saying in the cleaning sequence, they were like plugging themselves in and out of outlets throughout the house?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Unless they were using them to swing from stuff and they weren't plugged in at all because they were hanging from. It doesn't make any sense.
And do they die just a little bit before they plug in?
If you lose power, right, are you essentially dead?
Are we going back to the religious aspects of this?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think the religious metaphor is just thrown right out the window. No, maybe it came back.
We can come back. We can do.
I mean, it's kind of a weak metaphor, I will admit. It's not the most airtight. I mean.
No. I like it. I don't mind talking about it. I like it.
I mean, I didn't think that it was that good when I was first putting my notes together. I'm going to admit. But it was the most that I had.
Well, this movie itself is a religious experience. So I think you did just fine. Here are we.
I do want to say one thing about the scene when everybody comes back together. They see they see Lampy on the floor, and the way that the scene fades out is there is the light fades off of all of the objects except for Lampy. It lingers just like a second or two,
mm-hmm.
and that I thought was a beautiful scene.
Yeah. Now we have this tragic loss of a character, right?
Right.
Except no,
we don't.
No, not
this
at
is
all.
A kids' film.
Yeah, nobody dies.
Right.
Actually, that's not true, but none of our guys die.
Air conditioner gets repaired.
Yeah. He only kind of died.
Yeah. He comes back to life because the master brings him back to life because the master is Jesus.
Yep.
The AC unit is Lazarus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I no, think that right. I mean, maybe they all call him master because he's fixed each one of them at least once.
Mm. They have reason to believe.
Yeah. This guy, this, what is it, Rob?
Yeah.
Rob seems to be very... technically minded.
Well, he's definitely a handyman. But his dorm room later on looks like he's going to be an architect.
Mm-hmm.
Architect.
Yeah.
Architect. He's an architect. Okay, so there are only three plugs, blah, blah, blah. Okay, my notes at this point have nothing to do with the film. One of the notes is, watch this movie if you want to get yelled at by Tony the Tiger for 90 minutes. And also, their plugs are like Navi hair tails.
Yeah. The cords work as the needs of the plot require, because like they eventually find Blinky and he's high up in a tree. Like, we both have cleaning experience and we know.
Your cord length is very important with your vacuum.
Mm-hmm. And no vacuum has a cord that will go up like, I mean,
blankets, like the way they show it, the blanket is at least 30, maybe 50 feet in the air.
Yeah. And that cord goes over the branch
back down to the ground and then ties to a thing.
Yeah. Also, Kirby eats his own cord.
Yeah, he sucks it up in his little well and it just, that's what, none of this makes any sense.
Right.
None of it. But yeah. He rolls himself to the top. Blanky climbs on him. There's
a struggle.
If you drop a blanket from a height, like nothing happens to the blanket. Even if it has like some small machine for the heating element of a heated blanket.
Right.
It does not make.
Blinky could have just taken one for the team.
Fallen out of the tree.
He's also a coward. We're adding more things to the list of emotions and feelings he has.
Well, at least he isn't used as a parachute at any point. That would have like...
In the opening sequence, Toaster did try to use him as like a cape. Like he was trying, like she was trying to fly.
Yeah, yeah. Like so. The how do we get out of here sequence was like...
Yeah.
That was pretty good. But then, okay, so the vacuum falls with Blinky at more than halfway up that height. Mm-hmm. That... I don't know about you, but I've never dropped my vacuum more than like 4 feet. But if I dropped it from, say, the top of 8 feet, 8 stairs, like the top of some stairs in a regular house, 8 feet or so,
mm-hmm.
like you would be like, my vacuum's dead.
Yep.
So if it falls from the tree, to the forest floor.
It was probably like about 20 feet from the forest floor.
Mm-hmm. Those Kirby's are strong.
Yeah. So they have
I say at this point in my notes, the vacuum is 100% braver than the toaster.
Yeah. Because like Kirby doesn't mention anything. Kirby's just like, yeah, here, there's my cord. Floop, flings it right over there.
Yeah.
Just starts, you know, and when everything comes down, everybody's like, oh, Kirby, that was so great. Oh, you were so great. And Kirby's just like, grizzled. I'm a grizzled old man. sort of.
It's just what needed doing. I had no emotional pull in it.
Yeah. And then they come to a waterfall, and that's when Kirby shorts out.
Which is, here's the thing, they do all of this wet stuff, and it never affects any of them until the plot needs it to. Mm-hmm. And so they went and hung out at a pond with a whole bunch of spitting fish and frogs and stuff, and then he rolled through an entire forest, which is rarely mm-hmm. dry. And then, so now, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
This is probably the most boring part of the movie to me.
Here's the thing. Like, he was eating his own cord like 2 minutes ago. In movie time, he was eating his own cord. And then they're like, oh no, get the cord out of his mouth. He's short circuiting. And Toaster has to like, you know, walk him around. Like
he's like, he's getting rebooted.
Yeah.
More sweeping motions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now they have to cross the chasm between either side of the waterfall.
Yeah. And so,
what's the best, safest way to do that?
Obviously, with their plot convenient cords.
And human chain.
Yeah.
So they all form
object chain? Chain of objects?
People is people no matter how inanimate object.
This movie isn't consistent. Why should we be?
No, I think we're about on point with this film in terms of consistency. So they all form a chain. The blanket doesn't have to do squat. She just gets tied to other things.
Mm-hmm.
And the toasters, the important one, they fling him all the way over to the other side. And then whoever thought that putting the toaster in charge of pulling every object on this journey across the chasm.
Well, see, the toaster's in charge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess so. Yeah. But I don't know why she freaks out right there.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe it's because of that nightmare where she was over the bathtub with water.
Yeah, because her eyes go all swirly, like she's in shock or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell what she's in shock about. Is it the height? Is it the water? Is it the fear that she will fail all of her friends and they will all end up broken, alone, and without their master?
Maybe.
How existential is this moment for this toaster? Because it seems to be the only time that she falters like that.
Yeah. And she falters and everyone ends up falling.
They all drop. And
except for Kirby.
Kirby is up there and his plug is dangling and he's like, oh no. But like, they were all knotted together.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, was his just plugged into another plug or something? Like, it was plugged into the chair, so it just plopped out when it all, like, went all taut?
Maybe it's the needs of the plot.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's up at the top, and this is his big character moment, mm-hmm. because he looks down, and he's like, what do I do? What do I do? I gotta go after him, mm-hmm. and just jumps off a cliff into water, which he shorted out about, not 40 seconds ago.
Mm-hmm. It seems like this waterfall has some sort of extra properties that cause more strain on the characters. Because, like, the vacuum kind of shorts out as soon as they get to the waterfall.
Yeah.
The toaster shorts out. It's like it's a magic waterfall.
But then they all go into the water and are fine.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a wizard did it.
Maybe it's because they're not plugged in and they had time to... This is a time when they lose the chair, though. And now, like, they move around a lot without being plugged into anything.
Yeah. I don't know how this universe works. Maybe there are other movies. Maybe we need to...
Yeah, we got to figure out how this little toaster gets to Mars.
Just throws her cord up there and eats it.
Yeah.
Okay, so they end up at one point, Kirby starts to sink into some quicksand. I don't think we... Oh, sorry. Kirby collects all of them on his body and they get out of the river.
Right. And Toaster has like this big moment where she like walks away.
Gosh, she goes up to a puddle. And I have this thing against this trope specifically. When someone looks into the water, and maybe it's because I watched Lion King too much as a kid. I don't know. But when a character looks down at their reflection and then slaps it because myself.
Yeah.
And my eyes roll so hard and I'm like, you're too on the nose. You're like that guy, you're like every angry guy who punches a mirror to show just how much he hates himself. Yeah, it's stupid and I don't like it. And the freaking toaster did it now. The toaster who has problems with reflections all the time.
I'm not a flower. I'm not even a toaster anymore.
There's a nice exchange between Radio and Lampy where Radio's like, things could always be worse. And then Lamp says, how could they be worse? And he said, they couldn't. I lied. No chair, no battery. This means it's everybody else's chance to pull Kirby.
Yes, and they do so poorly. At this point, Kirby falls into a puddle.
Yeah, like quicksand?
Yeah.
Or mud puddle?
A mud puddle. And everybody, human changes again. Person, item changes again. And they all start getting sucked down. Right? And then, okay, so something science happens that I like is the radio is the last one to get sucked in, right? Oh, the blanket says to the toaster, the toaster's don't be afraid, don't be afraid.
No, the toaster says to blanket, oh, can't you unravel yourself? And the blanket's just like, I'm not afraid.
And then gets sucked under. And then the toaster goes down. And then the radio's the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And the radio starts like, well, I guess I'll play this song. It's the final something or other. And I forget which song they play. Right. But as the radio goes into the slime, the sound changes when the speaker hole goes under the water. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal to me because sometimes when this kind of thing happens, the sound doesn't stop until like the antenna goes under. And that's not where the sound comes from. That's not science.
Mm-hmm. But there's a guy who comes by and just grabs the antenna.
It's like an antenna.
Yeah.
Awesome. And he just grabs it.
And it turns into a radio. And then it turns into more appliances. And this guy has to be pretty strong. Because like he pulls out an old-fashioned Kirby by an antenna that it's attached
to. Those things weigh like 50 pounds.
Oh, my goodness. All metal.
He freaking Luke X-wings his way out of this.
Yes! That is exactly right.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So then.
Yeah. Oh, I also wrote down that his dog's name is Quadruped.
Is it?
I don't know. I can't remember anymore. I can't remember because this movie does so much. That's what my notes say. So I'm going to say his dog's name is Quadruped.
Okay, I'm down. You cut into the car. The dog is buckled in as mm-hmm. like a human person in the passenger seat. All the stuff is thrown in the back. The thing is a monster truck. It's got wheels the size of other cars. He drives over trees to get back to his shop. And you're like, what kind of person is this? As they pull in, because you've only seen the dog in the car and the fact that they've pulled all of these things out of the mud.
One of the wheels is like taller than him.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they pull up in front of a building that just says parts, which here's the thing, my dear plotters from our disposable tech nation. There was a time when you would fix a thing that broke instead of replacing a thing that broke. So there was this thing called a parts shop. And you would go in there and get the piece of the item that you needed replacing, like a motor or a plug or some piece of machinery that, you know, could have easily broken at home, but you've got the main body of the item so you could merely repair it.
Think of it as like eBay, but like right down the street.
Yeah.
Or like in the other county, depending on where you lived.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. So this person whose name I cannot remember.
Yeah.
Do you know it?
No.
Awesome. Fat Repair Guy is what we're going to call him. He takes all the items to the back room where he keeps his spare parts in a shop full of spare parts. This is where he prepares damaged items to salvage the parts from it. It's kind of like a junkyard,
mm-hmm.
which there are two of in this film now, if you count that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, anybody ready for the sexy tape recorder?
Okay, so he brings the objects back into the back. And
drinks
a smoothie from a blender and
eats a handful of marshmallows.
Yeah. He goes up front to talk with a customer. And then that's when.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. I've got a blender motor. I just got a whole bunch in stock.
Well, they do this moment where the group is like, oh, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. And all these other like appliances start coming out and you get like Phil Hartman doing a Peter Lorre.
Oh, you burned out your lamp. Oh, you can have mine.
just while
you
can.
He just flicks his. It's the ceiling lamp. And he flicks his. He only has one bulb, but he mm-hmm. flicks it to the lamp who then replaces it, who's been damaged since the lightning strike.
Yeah. And that's when they hear the customer asking for a blender motor. And
I got a whole box out back.
That repair guy comes in. And he takes the motor out of the blender he was just using.
So the blender he used heard the conversation and went to hide behind a box of cereal and is just cowering there. And the guy's like, I could have sworn I left my blender here just a second ago.
Which means that if you lose an appliance, mm-hmm. it did walk away mm-hmm. because you were a bad owner.
Yes. Yes.
That is what this movie is saying.
And if you are good to your items, they will find you and love you again.
The shop owner's name is Elmo St. Peters. He was in Nightmare Before Christmas as Igor, Lenny the Binoculars in Toy Story. He was in Bug's Life. He's done a lot of Pixar movies.
What was his character's name in the movie?
Elmo St. Peters.
His character's name was?
His character's name was Elmo St. Peters. His real name is Joe Ranft. R-A-N-F-T.
Oh.
Ranft.
Yeah.
Ranft.
Elmo St. Peters.
Too many consonants in that name. Ranft. Sorry.
Yeah. And so there's like this whole horror like scene of.
Oh, yeah. They do the back. They do this several mm-hmm. times in this film, but they backlight the guy. So his shadow is on the wall
mm-hmm.
and you see him. Well, you visually, you actually get to see him take the top off of the blender. And then it cuts to the shadows where he starts wrenching it apart and they cut to the faces mm-hmm. of the appliances. And they're like, oh, my God. Yeah. And then they like. He pulls out the motor and he cuts the cord with a sickening snap. And then he puts it in a pre-labeled box. He does some nice paperwork. Like when he does it, he pulls out paper towels to do this all on. And then he puts a little piece of paper over it in the box. And he walks out and he cut back to them being horrified in this baby carriage he's placed them in.
Drip, drip,
the,
drip.
Yeah, the oil from the motor, the leftover pieces, is dripping on the floor like blood, and they're like, oh,
yeah. And that's when we get into another musical number called It's a B-Movie.
It's, without argument, the best song in the entire film.
Definitely.
It's so good because it's all of these, the randomness. You've got the horror aspect. You've got, like,
sexy tape lady.
She's like,
God. So you know those like okay, so
it's a double, what you would probably know the name, Jen. It's the two one of those old actual tape recorders that's got the two spools, and those were her boobs.
And she's spinning them like she's got pasties on them.
And she's using a piece of the ribbon to like be her arms as she shakes her hips and her boobs.
So tape recorder.
Yeah, but it's like, it's got a fancy name, like a two-spooled whatever. Okay, and then it's a fantastic song. How does it go again? Hold on.
It's a B-movie.
Yes.
It's a B-movie show.
Yes, it's this big swelling chorus. And like the thing that drew me into Harry Potter, the thing that drives me into sci-fi is always like bizarre items that I wouldn't think of. Right? That's the thing that draws me into fantasy, too. Like, how are you going to solve this problem? And then you've got this ex machina, right? So show me a bunch of bizarre stuff that doesn't make any sense, and then tell me why it makes sense, and then I'm totally into it. So this scene probably started all that. They do, it's a B-movie, and then they cut to all of these mishmash items. Here's the thing, they're not all deconstructed household items. Some of them are household items that have been combined bizarrely with other household items. There is a coffee pot with two fork arms that then gets the shadow treatment on the wall, and it looks like a monster is like dancing on the wall, except who puts forks on a coffee pot?
There's a moment where there's a light hitting Lampy, and then you see his shadow up on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
a hand reaches towards, the shadow hand reaches towards Lampy's shadow.
But it's on Lampy, the one who generally makes the light, and there's a shadow on him.
Oh.
And I don't know why
that's a good catch.
Like, okay, so we are not referencing Toy Story enough in this podcast because John Lasseter, Pixar, Toy Story is like synonymous with Pixar.
Mm.
The icon for Pixar is also a bouncing lamp.
Also, there's the Sid's character who combines all of those really bizarre items. So, like, I just imagine Lasseter must sit around breaking things in half and gluing them back to other things.
Yeah.
There's a junkyard in Toy Story 3 as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, like, it makes more sense in Toy Story. This is, like, very much, like, this is Toy Story 0.
Yeah, I will take that. Put that down. That is exactly right. Toy Story 0.
Yeah.
It makes no sense in this fix-it shop that these items should be combined. This is where they do a lot of character work. So the lamp is that guy, the overhead lamp.
Mm-hmm.
Is who now? You knew the guy, the actor's name?
It's
Phil Hartman doing a character.
Peter Lorre.
The this guy who talks like this. Mm-hmm. Who Bugs Bunny makes fun of. Like, this is a big thing back in the 80s. But then there's a Joan Rivers one.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a shaving razor something,
like,
something.
There's...
Her name is something like Mishmash.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, I'm just going to throw this razor and this pair of sunglasses and... a vase together, and I'm gonna try and make it work. I was literally just looking at different things. I'm like, oh yeah,
it's a B movie, and they're all chased around, and then they're just terrified.
Yeah, and then the customer comes back and says, "Hey, do you have any radio tubes?
My wife liked that blender motor so much; she was wondering if you had any. if you had any radio tubes." Oh, Jen, would you like to explain to the millennials what a radio tube is?
Radios used to have tubes, not just a series of tubes called the internet.
Oh, I'll allow it.
Transistors and all kinds of electronica, too. Yeah,
this is before the internet. We had to use the earth like druids.
Yeah. But so repair guy comes to the back and...
I just got a box of those.
Yeah. And he always has just a box.
Yeah. A whole box.
And yeah. I think with the motor, he says, "I got a whole shipment back there." Mm-hmm. And then he comes out and he says, "This is the last one that I got." Like, we're not supposed to like this guy because he's supposed to be seen as a little bit skeevy.
I disagree. And I've got science on my side. We're just not to that yet.
Yeah. So, radio tubes, the radio's going to be getting it next. And he's like, hide me, hide me, hide me. And the guy comes
I can get
back.
You bread. I can get you mountains of buns.
Yeah.
Some hot cross buns.
Yeah. And Toaster goes ahead and, you know, tries to hide them to the best of their ability.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, proving my point that if you are bad to your appliances, they will literally pick up and walk away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
But they weren't quick enough, and repair guy finds the radio,
mm-hmm.
and that's when the objects spring into gear.
But this thing, it's so bizarre. So Toaster, does Lamp get in there too?
It was the vacuum.
The vacuum has the toaster on top of it with the blanket over it.
Yeah.
And then the lamp is below it.
Yeah.
To light it up.
Yeah.
So then when the guy turns around with the radio, he sees his own face lit up in this big ghosty looking thing that when you look at it, I mean, the thing that startles him is that he doesn't expect it to be there and it's in his face, right? But if you stopped for a second and was like Bremertown musicians where all the animals stack on top of each other, that's hilarious.
I have a note here. Kind men find that they are cruel. Brave men find that they are cowards. When faced with their true selves, most men run away screaming. Call back to the Neverending Story podcast. You should totally go listen to that.
But we should have made the reference earlier when the vacuum was sucking up all of the... Because he goes, I got all these rocks and sticks and who knows what in there. And I'm like, sometimes the guts of a vacuum are stonier. Okay. Here's my argument for why what's his name? Elmo?
Elmo.
Okay, here's my argument for why Elmo's actually a good guy.
Okay.
I only call him fat guy in my notes. I'm the worst. Okay. He drinks healthy shakes. He recycles and reuses. He's good at customer service.
Mm-hmm.
He's a small business owner, and that takes panache. Mm-hmm. He also dresses for his body because with that gut he got, you know, most guys like cinch their belt up in there and they make it look like they're a half squeezed tube of toothpaste. He's like, look, I got to get my pants over my belly button right up in there and I'm going to tuck in my shirt because I'm a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And to his credit, he thinks all of these objects aren't alive.
Yeah.
So he's just doing business and getting punished for it. What is so bad about this guy?
This whole movie could very easily, like if it came out in the actual 90s instead of the 80s, it would probably be this whole big like reuse, recycle message. They would have, you know, ham-fisted that in, and this guy would have been the hero.
I feel like nothing is ham-fisted into this film. It is all just thrown Flatter. On the floor, and they're like, walk through it, guys. We all had to.
Part 2 is completed, Applauder, which means you've been listening to our review of The Brave Little Toaster for quite possibly the full length of this fine feature-length animation. But we're only 2/3 of the way through our discussion, and still have our shocked and applaudable moments to share with you. Hey, this is your audio engineer and brave, just not Pixar's brave, audience participation pal, Jen. Thanking you for continuing to venture further into the wordy woods of our first episode of 2020. Having difficulty tracking with us or have some good vibes to share? Why not tag or message us on Facebook using @shockedandapplaud or on Twitter using @shockedapplaud. We still have one more part left in our review of this made-for-adults children's classic. Make sure you stay charged until next week when we complete our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.